On this episode of Football 301, Corey Kinnon from Daft on Draft joins me for a nice, deep, sickos look at the 2027 draft class. I know it's 2026. I know the 2026 class just happened a couple weeks ago. I know I said I'm sick and tired. But let's look at 2027 because it's so much fun. From Arch Manning to Dante Moore to Lenora Sellers to a whole bunch of fun other guys. Really, really fun deep dive with Corey. See you guys in a sec. Hello, welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. Very fun show for you guys today. It's a look ahead to the 2027 draft. Didn't we just get done with draft season? Yeah, but I'm a sicko and I just like looking ahead and, you know, it opens up my summers. And what's great, not only looking at the 2027 draft, looking at the quarterbacks, and I have a fellow sicko that does the exact same thing I do, deep dives into the draft, current draft class, and then does a look ahead. And this guy was also someone that was another member. I would actually even say he beat me to it on the Mendoza train, the Fernando Mendoza train. But without further, more introduction needed. We'll get more into it. We'll talk about Mendoza and take a little bit of victory lap together. But this is Corey Kinnon from Daft on Draft. He does so much good work on the draft and just on football overall. Great. I'm so happy that you joined me, Corey. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, no problem. A little home and home action here. I had you on my podcast last year, and now I'm over here this year. So, yeah, I love it.
I know. I felt like you had me last year because I think you. I was kind of aware of you. I think we had a ton of mutual friends. I was looking ahead, and I was like, all right, this Mendoza guy's got something to him. And then when I think I wrote an article, I did a too early big board. You were like, yes. Me too. Hey. So we started talking from there, started talking about class. Yeah. We talked about Arch Manning, which we'll talk about more today, but maybe just even talk about your process into Fernando Mendoza and kind of your deep dive on quarterbacks. Cause I think since then you and I have really talked about some of these guys we're going to talk about today. So it's pretty fun to maybe just do that in more of a public forum.
Yeah. So for me, you know, the Mendoza thing came off of the 2025 class where I just like, wasn't in love with any of the quarterbacks, to be honest with you. I was like lower than consensus on Cam Ward leaving the draft process than a lot of people were. And so Mendoza was actually the first quarterback that I charted. I chart quarterbacks for a ball placement and accuracy perspective. And obviously that's just like one piece of the puzzle to that process. But just coming off the 2025 class and then even the Cal tape, the internal timer, the post-snap shortcuts that he would find was something I didn't see from people in the 2025 class. The ability to count the amount of people in the box versus the amount of people he had in protection and know where he was hot. Just like the little things like that I was drawn to from Mendoza. And then you watch the arm and the balls, it's not like an A-plus arm by any means, but enough there. It's like, oh, the ball pops when he's trying to drive the football. And when he's throwing the deep ball, it drops in the breadbasket consistently. And so like all of the pieces started to get put together and it's like, this is like, if this guy would have declared in 2025, I probably would have said like, I would have this guy QB1 compared to the guys I just watched. And so then I was like, yeah, this is QB1 for 2026. And it just kind of stayed that way throughout the summer and then never really changed throughout the year as well. So yeah, I always start out with the charting profile and then go from there and like look at the peripheral tools, obviously the arm talent. And then obviously you see the pre-snap, post-snap. And it's not like he was doing a ton pre-snap, but it was like the small things in his head. You could see the gears were turning in his head more so than not. That I was like, yeah, this guy's got it. So that was kind of my process with Mendoza last year.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you kind of articulate that so well. And I think that's what was so much fun even last year talking about, because it was like, right, you watch this game, you watch third down and you see him doing these little things. And I really enjoyed talking with you about your process and just seeing some stuff eye to eye. And we even on your show last year had some disagreements, but also I just want to reiterate, everyone check out Daft on Draft because Corey does so much good stuff. He mentioned the charting. That stuff is great. I've openly admitted this. I don't do any open charting. It's more just stuff off the top of my head. And then I will look up maybe afterwards and I'm like, okay, yeah, that's ballpark. We're good. So I really do appreciate the ones that, you know, get into the weeds on that and grind with it. I work with somebody, Matt Armin, who does it with receivers. And I know you do it so much with quarterbacks too. So, but also you check out all positions as well, not just quarterbacks. But I know that you look ahead, not only just with Mendoza last year, but for this year's draft class, 2027. Yes, it's May 2026, but this is a pretty juicy draft class overall. And I know there's a lot of names in this quarterback class, we'll start with one at the top, but even before I get into that, what is your kind of maybe macro view of this quarterback class that's getting a lot of hype, and there's a lot of name recognition, there's a lot of big schools, there's a lot of teams that are going to be up for national championships, maybe some surprising teams, some productive quarterbacks, but maybe after your first kind of blush with this class or first deep dive with this class, kind of what was your macro takeaway?
Yeah, I feel more confident in the talent at the top than I did last year. Mm-hmm. You know, last year it was like, well, this guy could take a leap, and this guy could take a leap, and this guy could take a leap.
Yep.
I feel good about what we've already seen from two or three of these quarterbacks at the top. I will say, I DM'd you this a little bit earlier today. It's like I was, you know, doing some last minute on some of these other guys. It's like I don't have that level of conviction with any of these guys that I had with Mendoza to be like, this is this year's big riser. I just don't have that kind of conviction on any of these guys that people aren't already talking about outside of, you know, the first two we'll talk about here. But I will say that, like, this class feels very much more by the book than last year's, where it's like we were banking heavy on tools. When I see the mid round of this group, it's like, okay, we're talking 5th year seniors, we're talking 6th year seniors, guys, we kind of know who they are. Of course, like, there are some that I'm like, they could take a leap, but like, more so than not, like, I have a feeling that I have a pretty good grip on like who these guys are outside of a few who have the big tools that could take a leap.
And then there's a couple that we'll talk about in this opening section as well, that maybe were a year early on as well. I think that's what's fun about this class, that I think you put it in a great way. This last year's class, and this is why Mendoza won me over as well, was that, okay, yes, Sellers, who Lenore Sellers, we'll talk about here. Okay, I really like the tools. I like this. I like the projection of that, all that. But Mendoza felt more real already. And Sellers, again, and we're going to talk about him in a sec, still feels like, you know, he's theory. You know, he's an idea of a player. But even other guys in last year's class, that's kind of how, like, Carson Beck already kind of knew kind of what his game was, whether that's fair or not. You know, just other guys. Arch was interesting, but he's only coming off 2 starts. You know, there it was. That Mendoza felt the most real of that class, and that was even the year before that. I mean, shoot, I'm still the highest guy probably on Riley Leonard, but that was just because I was like, I'm trying to find somebody. Like, and then Cam Ward rose, but even Cam Ward was an unusual profile. I would say he's really won me over more as a pro, maybe even than he did in college, which is that's a different podcast topic. But let's just start with the guy I already mentioned. Let's just go with Arch Manning, and I think this is the guy. I think I agree with your assessment that these guys at the top, I have a better feel for, even if one I'm higher on than others. And there's some interesting kind of names in the middle that I think there's one guy we're going to, if we had to pick this year's Mendoza, this might be the guy, but I'm spoiling everything. So let's just get to Arch Manning, and then we'll get to a whole bunch of guys. Don't you guys worry. We have plenty of quarterbacks we're going to talk about here. Let's just start with Arch. All right. First and foremost, we talked about Arch last year. I think we were both intrigued. I'm kind of disco stew meme it a little bit. You know, I do the upward projection, and I always point kind of the highs. You kind of had a little bit more of like, okay, I have questions about this. How did you feel about his 2025? Do you think the hype is justified? Is he your number one guy right now? Everything about Arch. What are your thoughts? Arch Manning, quarterback, Texas, for anyone that is not aware of who Arch Manning is.
I would feel comfortable putting him as QB1 right now. And that's me as a firm believer in Dante Moore as well, heading in like out of the last season into this season. What I saw from Arch down the stretch, like, I just think that a lot of people stopped watching Arch in October and was like, this guy's not good. And they moved on.
Yes, they did.
And then we got to Florida and then we got to Tennessee and then we moved on and on and on. And he stacked games. And even though it's still like not the prettiest process overall in terms of like getting the ball to point A to point B a lot, he has every single trait or attribute that you would look for in a quarterback, starting at the size and the sack avoidance. There are so many reps of like defensive linemen draped around his hips trying to get him to the ground and him still getting the ball off. He is a big dude, a big, big dude. So that's a good place to start. The arm, in terms of like elasticity and flexibility and ability to manipulate windows, is excellent. The arm, in terms of ability to drive the football, is good to sufficient. I don't think he has like overbearing, like the ball doesn't pop out of his hands when he's driving the football, but it's good enough. But then when you talk about arm talent in terms of the ability to layer the football or feather the football over second level defenders on deep balls, it's tremendous. Like, it's tremendous. And then you go look at the pocket movement skills and the hip flexibility and the ability to navigate these like unbelievably narrow alleyways and then reset his feet and throw. I don't know if, again, I've been doing this since like 2018, 2019. I don't know if I've ever seen a quarterback reduce surface area in muddy waters the way he has and then flip his hips back out and plant his feet and throw the football. I was texting a Southwest scout and I was like, fill in the blank. Arch Manning has the best pocket movement skills since, and he said Joe Burrow. The pocket stuff is so, so clean. There are so many quarterbacks in this class. I see they're heated up, they're microwaved a little bit, and the feet get really hyperactive and they start to drift. Yep. Arch is stepping into that stuff. He is stepping into that stuff and throwing while taking helmets to the chin. It's all of that kind of stuff that makes me feel really, really bullish about Arch Manning. The ball placement and accuracy is really excellent as well. My biggest gripe still is, though, is it feels like he is kind of an aim shooter in the short game. Like he tries to shortcut his mechanics in the short game, and it feels like he is kind of just aiming rather than trusting his process. Because there's a lot of like bubble screens and RPOs that are leveraged to the wrong shoulder, or like the quick game stuff. It's like, why is that ball above hit the crown of the helmet? Just like stuff like that in the short game that needs to be tightened up. Correct. Yeah. But outside of that, man, like the peripheral stuff is all there from Arch.
Yeah, I mean, again, you nailed it. I think you're just talking about like the lack of surface area needed. And I kind of always articulate this or try to some guys, you know, like a guy like Penix or even Ty Simpson this year, where I thought those guys need a little something. They need to hitch into the throw to get the best out of them. I just think the lack of platform needed for Arch is so, I'm glad you highlighted that because I agree that's a huge highlight. Core strength is maybe how I've described it, is like his core strength is excellent. And it's you know, Caleb had that a little bit too, where they can just torque their bodies in ways that I agree it's unusual. I've been struggling to find a comparison for him. You know, cause I'm just really trying to rack my brain. Like he moves like a souped up Eli, you know, like, you know, like, and I actually think Eli's arm strength is actually what I would compare it to, where it's good, but he's not a fireballer. You know, he doesn't play like Eli. He's so much more like, and Eli was aggressive too, especially at the end of his career. It was like, okay, chill. Arch has that component to him too, but then he's like in Archie's body, his grandfather's body, and his grandfather's athleticism, and Cooper, his dad, who was a wide receiver. Like that's, it's kind of a funny mix. Like, but as far as I think Peyton is probably the guy he plays like the least of the Manning, you know, family. But yeah, that core strength, that arm, I agree. It's more good. I think he throws a beautiful deep ball. So it's more the differences of arm strength. It's not the depth of the pass. It's when, if he's throwing through a wall, it's more just good, but the deep ball is excellent. You know, just differences of arm strength. Like his range of throws is great. And the lack of, you know, he doesn't need much to get that aggressiveness out, if that makes sense. It doesn't, he's willing to throw into tight space. He's willing to throw from crappy pockets. You mentioned his toughness. He's insanely tough and insanely competitive. And I mean, that's going to win anybody over. You did a great job. You highlighted the pocket movement. I agree with that. I think there's zero fat with his movement. He steps up into the teeth of it. It's something that we both, I think, look for in our quarterbacks, is whether you're staying aggressive when the circumstances around you aren't great, you know, and the situation isn't great, and you're still trying to get that aggressive play, that explosive play. And Arch is wired that way. And on top of it, he's a plus-plus athlete. Like, I think he's a sub 4.5 guy, like, or at least at the worst 4.54, you know, somewhere around there at 6'4", 220. You know, I'm infatuated with him. I think he's excellent. I'm very, very high on him. You know, May is still my guy, you know, but Arch has been one of the guys that I've enjoyed since maybe in media. So since 2020 scouting guys, and even going back to when I've like officially done it. So like 2013, 2014, like he's up there as one of the guys I'm highest on, at least going into this last year. Things can change, but I'm very bullish on Arch Manning next year. You already even mentioned the negatives I have for him. Sometimes he can be a little amped up on underneath stuff, like, okay, I'm getting to my check down here. Boom, and he just fires it 110 miles an hour. And it's like, okay, just chill. You mentioned the layering of throws. I think that the creativity he can throw, because he's able to kind of change arm slots and throw some over balls. I'm pretty high on him. Would you, obviously I'm high. How high are you on him maybe just going into this year, or maybe how high you can get? What I call a purple chip guy, which is like an elite quarterback. Again, May was that. Andrew Luck is the best quarterback prospect I've ever watched. I don't think anyone will ever touch him. Or do you consider him more just like a good first round prospect? Maybe like, that's how Mendoza was to me, at least.
Yeah, so I have it sorted as blue chip, high quality starter, and starter as kind of like the, what I would consider like first round grades. I don't do round grades. I do like rolls.
I know it's that's why I always try to tell people. I'm translating. Like even for me, I don't really do first round grade. It's more of like a color coding system, and then I just try to translate it to be somewhat entertaining. But sorry to cut you off, but keep going.
I would have him in that high quality starter tier. So not quite up to the blue chip tier, but I would have him in that high quality starter tier. And that's the only quarterback I have in that tier. So
Yep, that's fair. Not to say, let's get to the other guy. So I think long story short, I think we're extremely high on Arch. I think the hype is justified. We'll see if he can achieve maybe that high end prospect tier or if he's just a very good one. Both are good things and both are worth number one picks. So, but I think, I mean, even just pedigree, pocket movement, athleticism, arm strength. He has enough arm strength. He's not going to be a Josh Allen arm, but I mean, this is what a number one pick looks like, at least to me. Aggressiveness, intangibles, toughness, yada, yada, yada. I think the hype is justified. I'm very bullish on Texas this year because they also have Cam Coleman at wide receiver, the transfer from Auburn, who is like an AJ Green clone. Have you watched him at all?
I have. Yeah. He's tremendous. He's tremendous. A little like leggy with his route running, he's really good.
Oh, I know. If Jeremiah Smith was in this class, he's like easy receiver one. Like it's like, you know, an easy top five pick. I'm very excited to see Manning and Coleman kind of work some magic together. All right, let's get to another guy, Dante Moore. Consensus QB2 or even QB1 for some people, which I understand. Mm-hmm. I thought he was going to declare because he probably would have been a top 20 pick if he did declare. But anyways, he very accurate first year fully starting. You know, he's a transfer from UCLA. I feel like I've talked about Dante Moore so much already. But he, you know, I think an accurate quarterback. I think some really nice things. I know you got high on him, and I think we were kind of in lockstep how we saw him. And then maybe the end of the season kind of tailed off on him. But what do you think about Dante Moore? And where do you think about him, you know, graded him? Is he your QB2, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah, so Dante would be my QB2. I'm still really high on Dante. I thought like coming into the season as a first-year starter, it immediately looked like a professional. Everything about his game is professional. The lower body mechanics, how fast he gets it through like his throwing motion, how tight his upper body mechanics are as well. The ball placement accuracy is off the charts tremendous with Dante Moore as well. Again, the arm in terms of drive is good to sufficient as well. I would put it still a tier below Arch Manning in terms of good to sufficient, but it is good to sufficient, I would say. The big thing with Dante Moore, and I even think he's like really creative and like, you can see some quarterbacks go like, okay, my progressions are 1, 2, 3. You can see him get to a spot with his eyes and say, that's not there, but I know 3 is based on what I'm seeing at 1. And kind of skip 2 and get to 3. So that kind of creative problem solving is something that I really look for in quarterbacks as well. And I think Dante's got that. My biggest gripe with Dante Moore, it has been and it continues to be how he plays when he's heated up. Like, again, put him in a pressure cooker. How does he play? Those are the situations where he tends to play his worst, both from a cognitive perspective and from just a response to pressure perspective. It just seems like everything goes out the window. You go back to the Texas Tech game, and they picked up a 4th-and-1 that they went for it. But on this 4th-and-1, Kenyon Sadiq is like, it's meant to like play act, get everybody forward, and then you're going to sneak the tight end behind. He checks it down, and they get the first down, but Sadiq is running a seam ball right down the heart, like wide open, nobody on him, and he doesn't see it. You know, those are the situations where he's heated up by pressure, and the process goes out the window. I think he does have a little bit of drifting tendencies as well. Kind of those bigger games are the games that he didn't play as well. For Oregon. So like if there's one things that I want to see from Dante Moore, one, can you fill out your frame a little bit more? Because he's rail thin, and that's kind of dangerous. And then two, it would be how you got to be able to improve your ability to stand in pressure in those big moments and step into throws. And don't let that rattle you, because I do feel like he's kind of rattled in those situations.
No, I think really even how you ended those points, like at the end, maybe just bring up those negatives. That's where I'll start with Moore, and maybe why I got a little cooler on him at the end. He's my quarterback 3, and we'll talk about quarterback 2 in a sec and kind of why the other guy, Sellers, is my 2. But with Moore, it's, you mentioned he has to get a little bigger, which I agree with. There's not only just durability stuff, but just strength in the pocket, you know, withstanding blows. I totally agree with the pressure stuff. I thought that he just becomes very safe. And just very, which isn't like the worst thing. Like you can tell which plays he's comfortable with. And this is how I've kind of articulated more. I can tell which plays that he's repped a ton. And I can tell which plays are that week's new game plan play on third down or in the red zone. Because as soon as like the bullets are flying or something goes askew, eyes come down, check down. And that's fine. And when and it's a, it looks like a guy that needs more reps because, and when I get into a meeting with him, if I were the coach, it'd be great because I'd be like, yep, yep. Hey, you're heated up. You found your check down there. But it's like, if I'm going to take a guy in the top 10, top 15, it's what we talked about with Arch. You get heated up, you feel pressure. I want you to stay aggressive and I stay downfield. Now, this can improve. I've seen guys improve this. It's just sometimes they just need more reps and it happens. But you mentioned it already, and I agree. That's kind of been my big negative with him. And I felt that more as the season went along, as the competition got a little better, as he got heated up a little bit more. The Oregon's offensive line was a little sloppy this year at times, which I think that kind of attributed some parts to it. I thought sometimes he can kind of hang outside a little bit too much with his throws, which also speaks to comfort with concepts over the middle. But having said all that, I just wanted to start with the negatives and some of the roboticness of his play. And I think that, again, talking about the drills that he does and how it's better in meetings than maybe just, I just wanted to let it loose a little bit and play ball a little bit. And again, he might now go into it. Hey, I'm the firm starter. I have more confidence now. Now I can push it. So that's why I kind of keep him in this kind of middle ground where it's like, I could see him going way higher for me. Okay, maybe he gained 10 pounds or 7 pounds this offseason. Maybe all of a sudden now he's really comfortable with 80% of the playbook and he's ripping it every week. And now he's taking a hit and throwing it. And then he just rises or he plateaus. And it's like, okay, there's a lot to like here. The accuracy. Clean mechanics, very clean thrower. I think very clean from the pocket. Okay, but I don't think he gets so high with a profile like that. I think more of a, well, how would you kind of rate his athleticism? I have it kind of good, but it maybe just doesn't always show it, you know, kind of that like kind of Stroudish in that way. Maybe I'm just saying that because I see Stroud jersey in the background right now. But maybe where Stroud's a good athlete, but he doesn't want to show that he's a good athlete. So I don't know kind of maybe how I tier it.
Yeah, Stroudish, Pickettish, like kind of Kenny Pickett, that pit kind of stuff. Yeah. Like Pickett could scoot a little bit. Yeah, somewhere in that tier for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, not overwhelming, but like not a total stiff, you know, not Teddy Bridgewater, something like that. Right. Bridgewater's not stiff, but he was an average athlete. I think we're kind of on the same page with Moore. I had him still as a top 15 player on my too early big board. Mm-hmm. I have him as that kind of late first, early second grade if I had to do an equivalent kind of thing here. A guy that truly I'd be more comfortable taking in the teens or the 20s at this point in time. But I'm excited to see. They got some talent at Oregon, especially around him. I think they got talent on that defense, so it's gonna be a very good team. But he's your QB2, he's my QB3, kind of these Arch, then this next guy, Sellers, and then Moore. And let's just get to Sellers right now. Sellers is kind of the antithesis of Moore a little bit. The Norris Sellers is I think anybody that's followed me, listened to me, read anything I've ever written is not shocked that I would be bullish on the Norris Sellers. South Carolina, he stayed there, young for his grade, just freak athlete, big, huge arm. I think actually is a little bit had more offense put onto him as far as like pre-snap stuff than I think he gets credit for on third down, articulating some stuff pre-snap, which again, there's still room to grow. I thought his film was way better than when I was viewing it on TV because you realized, oh, that offensive line is one of the worst I've ever seen and at a big program. I mean, truly one of the worst I've ever watched. And then the receivers were average at best as far as at least getting open. So I saw a lot of kind of comments when I started talking about Sellers. People were like, takes too many sacks. He holds onto the ball. And then you watch it on film and he actually like leads the country in throwaways because he's just like trying not to take another sack because the whole line's getting beat up, all these things. But he's still more of an idea than a finished thing. They have a new offensive coordinator, Briles. So maybe that'll open some things up in this offense, make things a little bit easier. But this is kind of my half glass full kind of assessment of Sellers. Again, a guy I'm going to be probably higher than about just anybody else. But what do you think about Sellers in 2025? And where do you kind of stack him up? Maybe just even outside my own thoughts.
Yeah. So I think that the place to start the Sellers conversation is that, like, even if he improves incrementally, he's going to go in the first round. Like, he's 6'3", 240 with a rocket arm. You can think about whatever you want about the guy, whether you think he's not an actual quarterback or, you know, why are we doing the Sellers thing again? If he even improves incrementally, he's going to go in the first round. Like that's where the conversation I think starts here. But I am still a big fan of Sellers too. Again, still more of a theory than a player, but like I think, less of a theory than I thought Drew Aller was or is of a player, of a quarterback.
Agree.
Like, I think Drew Aller is very much a theory of a quarterback still, too. So, like, I'm way higher on Sellers than I would be Aller. And again, I think it goes a lot about turning negatives into positives routinely, especially in an offense where there's a lot of negatives around him happening. And he routinely turns those into positives. So that gives you a very high floor as a quarterback, I think. I think his accuracy is actually underrated. Short game stuff, kind of not in the same way of Arch, because I think Arch just sprays it, but like, yeah, you got to like get the ball down a little bit when you're thrown over the middle and when you're working the short game. But his deep ball, second to Arch, is probably the most beautiful deep ball in the class. Like, that thing just floats and it spins and it's routinely on target and drops in the breadbasket. This is a quarterback that's capable of creating explosives both through the air and on the ground, with the big arm, big legs, big body as well, hard to bring down as well. I made a cut up last summer of him like breaking sacks and then getting out and either throwing the ball away or creating something down the field. I'm more bullish on Sellers this year. One, because South Carolina tried the whole, these are NFL offensive coordinators, we're going to build an NFL structure around him so he can prove that he's a pro-style quarterback. Now they're going back to like the Art Briles with his son, and like, maybe we need to dial it back a little bit here and be more college. And it, like, the lines are blurred between NFL and college offenses anyway at this point, but like, let's dial it back from the pure drop backs. We're going to hit three steps, get the ball. Like, let's dial it back from that a little bit, let him have a little bit more fluidity outside of this rigid off it. Like, it worked for Rattler. That's fine. It works for Spencer Rattler, who came to South Carolina running the most like watered down college offense possible and needed to tighten up. For Sellers, you need to loosen that guy up. Like, he is tightly wound in that system. So I like that we're going in the reverse direction here with that. My biggest area for improvement with Lenore Sellers, and this is what I said last year, I saw an improvement and I didn't, but I hope it is this year, is like, he has all those tools and zero arrogance about them. So like, have some arm arrogance, see a backside dig and just drive it. Don't hesitate, hit that ball, hit the back foot and drive the football. Test some windows. It felt like he's terrified to make a mistake. It feels like he's terrified to make a mistake still. So be less terrified. I'm okay with my quarterbacks putting the ball in harm's way every once in a while if they're like testing these windows and creating explosives out of them. Yep. So I think he plays way too safe for as powerful of a weapon that he could be. It's like putting a muzzle on a tank. Like, I don't know how else to explain it. Like, it's just like you buy a tank and you park it in your driveway. That's kind of what it feels like with Sellers right now. So I want to see him open it up a little bit.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. He's got a limit test, and that's part of quarterback play. Some guys you see day one and they're just like, yeah, I'm letting it rip. And usually those are the guys I'm going to love. That's like even the guy like Nussmeier, who I was higher on, because he's always, I mean, he had an average arm at best, but he's going to at least test it and try and open it up as much. But Sellers has if he entered the NFL, he'd be a top five arm. I mean, as far as just pure strength. And yeah, I agree. It's that it was the Mike Shula offense. And I got the theory of it. Oh, we're using theory way too much right now. But I got the idea of it was that, oh, he coached Cam Newton. He merged the college, you know, Auburn offense that Malzahn ran when he's an NFL pro, you know, drop back guy. So we'll merge these worlds. Okay, now we got Sellers. He's like Cam Newton, right? But yeah, it was just so much like where it was just very rigid, very static, very just not, yeah, too pro style. Like, the pro style was too pro style and the college stuff wasn't collegey enough. Like, it was just like, just merge that, like what you need in college, you have to get funky with it. So no, I'm right there with you. I thought the ball placement and accuracy stuff, it's different than, you know, a guy like Richardson, who's going to get compared to a billion times. Like, I like Sellers' film right now and his processing and his way of playing quarterback way better than Richardson. And I was one of the higher guys on Richardson, but that was also like, he's way more of an idea than I think Sellers is. He's my quarterback too. And I'm just going to, I don't think I put this in my write-up, but at least I'll just say it right now. He has till Halloween. And then by Halloween, I'll be like, okay, all right, I'll know what to do with you then. And also too, he's a redshirt junior. He just turns 21 in June. You know, he's young for his grade or young for his class as well. So, you know, can't even drink yet, even though he's a redshirt junior or going to be a redshirt junior. But no, there's a lot to like. Just tools, tools, tools. the tools that you go for. And I just think more real quarterback play than, or improvement at quarterback play than I think he got credit for. So I'm kind of glad to actually, because we haven't really talked Sellers in probably a year or so. So I'm kind of glad to hear that you kind of thought the kind of the same things, that he's maybe polished out some of the stuff.
You can see him maybe fighting to stay in structure. Yeah, you can see him trying to fight to prove, like, I am staying in the pocket. I am here. And I think it erased a little bit of what makes Lenora Sellers to a point. So, like, again, good to tighten it up, but let's loosen the belt a little bit here and, like, allow for some fun in this. Yeah.
Yeah. He wears glasses in his pictures. He's got to stop being Clark Kent and start being Superman. You know, that's how I'm going to go with it. That's my tidy way to put it. The next two guys, I'm very excited to talk to you about. One I know we agree on, but I'm curious about this other guy. Drew Mestemaker was North Texas, now at Oklahoma State, falls as head coach onto Stillwater. I'll give a little background on Mestemaker. Didn't start in high school. Didn't start till senior year, start till his junior year, had a transfer, didn't start. And then walks on to North Texas and is the starting quarterback. And now is transferring up to Oklahoma State. And I had him on my too early big board as kind of the honorable mentions. So if I did like a top 35 or so, like, he would have made it. I'm actually a little bit more intrigued. Not only just the production stuff, he's kind of got a funky way of holding the ball, but he's got good size. I would say, before I even kick it over to you, I would say the number one thing I want to see him improve upon, other than maybe, you know, sharpen up some speed of, you know, his processing, which I think will just come with reps, is I think he get a little stronger as a player. I think he has the frame to do so, but I think he's just like, oh my God, I'm starting in college football now. Like, I should be redshirting, shouldn't I? Mestemaker, very fun watch. I think super aggressive, gunslinger, whatever you want to put it, but I'm curious of your thoughts on Mestemaker, Corey.
Yeah, I think I'm probably going to be a little bit lower than consensus on Mestemaker. Okay. I think that he is one of those guys that, like, we get excited about and then we overshoot and realize he's coming back to school for another year. And then, so I do think he's probably more of a 2028.
I feel like a year away.
2027. Yeah. For his size, the arm isn't as live as I would hope. Like, you can see the deep balls kind of start to flutter by the end of it. Again, the ability to drive the football is adequate. Like, it's not like he can't drive the football or anything like that. A good enough athlete, but not a great athlete to extend and kind of create with his legs. So I think that, like, the physical profile is just, like, good enough from Mestemaker right now, except for what you said, bulking up a little bit, being a little bit stronger through contact, being able to avoid some more sacks. He's another one of those quarterbacks that is either predetermining, I think, a lot. Like, there are a lot of close turnovers where defensive backs are just like, he's going to throw the RPO speed out, or he's going to throw the RPO hook, and they just jump it. And it's almost near disaster on a few occasions because of that, where I think he's just kind of predetermining. A lot of times it's backside one-on-ones. He's like, I'm just going to throw the backside one-on-one here. And they get jumped. So there's that. And there are a lot of times, too, where then he is working the front side concepts, but he's too quick to check down and not let it develop. Like, you know, you're supposed to read the hook curl linebacker. The hook curl linebacker does exactly what you're asking him to do or hoping that he does with this concept. But by the time the hook curl linebacker does it, you've already hit your check down. So there are some times I'm just like, just stand in there a second longer and, like, let the concept develop a little bit, let the routes develop, and then, like, let it rip. This sounds like I'm really doom and gloom. Another concern is, like, he played his two toughest opponents the last two games of the season, and it were his two worst games of the season. So, like, I'm aware of that as well. Although the two-lane game, like, two of the interceptions, two of the three were, like, dropped passes that landed the lap of defensive players. But, like, just from a processing standpoint, I do think he forced some throws that he didn't see, like, rotation-wise and things like that as well. Again, he's a redshirt sophomore. I don't need to be bullish on him yet. I don't think he's maxed out, capped out either. Again, he's 6'4", 211, and you can see his arms. They're not big. So, like, I think there's room for body development for sure with Mestemaker as well. So I'm not, like, closing the book on him, but I ultimately do think that he's a guy that we'll talk about in 2028 a lot more than 2027.
I'm right there with you. He was the guy I kind of referred to at the top of the show that I think he's a year away still. I just think I'm kind of glad. I mean, those pictures, if anyone's watching the YouTube show, I mean, they show it. Like, he needs to add some strength and needs to add some bulk. Like, I mean, he could probably easily gain 15 pounds. And I think it would just help. And that add some natural arm juice too. Like, that you can improve at half tier or so in arm strength and just natural college progression. Some guys are maxed out already, but some guys improve. I think I'm glad you mentioned this stuff on the deep ball and the throws tailing. Cam Ward has this issue sometimes because he throws sidearm, and because the sidearm where the ball comes off, it can kind of, it's just a, you know, physical thing. And the balls can kind of tail off on him as he pushes to the outside. I kind of know that as a prospect, but that he has the same issue. It's because he holds the ball low. So the elbow, I hate getting the QB mechanic stuff, but this stuff actually is the stuff that matters, not how quick and aesthetically pleasing a guy throws. And so the ball, the elbow kind of drops on him. And so it just tapers off on him. I've noticed that as well. I'm glad that you kind of put it the same way. It's like he still had more to improve on as far as like, once he gets off his first read. I described it as, it's not as bad as Lane Kiffin's offense, but it's a money play offense. Like, one play they're running Bryles stuff, the next play they're in a go-go offense, next play they're an I, like, they run just, none of it's cohesive. I'm not dogging this. It's awesome to watch. It's a fun offense. It's just more like money plays. It's like, all right, this play, and he knows, and it's good that his eyes are going to the right spot. It's then when he has to get to 2 to 3 to 4. If I'm going to bring this up about Dante Moore, I'm definitely going to bring up about Mestemaker. You can tell which plays he's comfortable with. But again, I'm right there with you. It's more that I think I'm keeping a pin in him as opposed to as like, oh yeah, this is my guy for this year, because there's fun flashes. I think he can still improve so much with his timing. He can improve as an athlete and as far as strength and all that stuff. And he has the frame to do so. But I agree. He has to let some plays breathe. You know, just kind of give stuff some more time. And again, I think more time on task will let him do that. Andy Staples brought up, I'm sure you know, but the background of his head coach, Eric Morris, who did a great job in North Texas, but it's Cam Ward's quarterback coach or head coach of Cam Ward that recruited him in Incarnate Ward, goes to Washington State. You know, that's who he has there. And he has John Matier.
John Matier.
He goes North Texas, got Mestemaker. And then when he's at Texas Tech, he recruited Mahomes. So either he's just recruiting the right areas or he's got a little eye for maybe unusual quarterback prospects. I mean, he got some interesting dudes on his resume right now. So I just think that I love watching this offense. I think it's a great hire for Oklahoma State. He made North Texas into a winner, but I just need to see a little bit more as a real quarterbackness, I guess, from Mestemaker. Because I mean, there is some nice stuff working from the pocket and everything.
Yeah, for sure. The last thing I would add there as well is when he does move his eyes off front side too, you can see it in his lower half. Like, the feet get kind of sped up too when he's forced off that. So like, I need to see like more cohesiveness in his body as well. So like, when you do have to like move your eyes, don't let the defense know you're scared of pressure or you're terrified to try to figure out what's next. Just like, take a deep breath, figure it out, keep your feet still. And so I think that goes in there too.
Yeah, it's not skittish. It's more just choppy. You know, maybe that's the way to describe it. So no, that's a great point. Yeah, maybe it comes with reps. That's where improvement comes. That's where timing improvement comes, is footwork, cutting out on the fat and stuff. But yeah, he's a great example of that. But interesting. I enjoyed watching him more than I thought. I thought he would just be a fun production quarterback at a small school. They did not play a ton of great defenses. So he had a lot of room for error on his throws, but it was more like, he's more real than I gave him credit for before I studied him. Like, that's why I kept him in my honorable mention list. The next guy, though, did make my top 25. And I would say this is the guy that, you know, you messaged me and I was like, yeah, he's my back pocket. I'm going to check him out. Don't you worry. And then I studied him and I'm like, yeah, he's real. I mean, he's very real. But another guy that might be a year away, might be a 28 guy, but I think he's just got the tools, the size, and a lot of fun to him. But I'm excited to hear you talk about Drake Lindsey, quarterback from Minnesota. Was in the news recently for an underage drinking from Arkansas and Fayetteville, but you know, it's college, it happens. He's under 21, so I guess we'll use that as a positive. He's not 21 yet, but no, a lot of interesting stuff with Lindsey. But take it away, Corey. Why did he grab your attention maybe last year, and how did you feel about him maybe if you took more of a deeper dive?
Yeah, so starting to what gravitates me towards him is just like the ease at which he flicks his wrist and the ball just flies off of his hand. Especially when he's layering the football, throwing the ball downfield, deep ball. Like, it is an effortless flick, and the ball just spins a million miles an hour. It's beautiful to watch. Again, I mentioned layering the football, he will throw some seam balls that maybe Arch is the only quarterback in this class that will throw. In terms of like, oh, that linebacker's got his back turned, I'm going to attack him and layer this in between the safety and that linebacker. So he definitely has the requisite arm arrogance to let it fly. Drake Lindsay is the quarterback that I think you have to filter the most out to find positives for, just because, and this isn't so much a Drake Lindsay thing, some of it kind of is, but like, it's mostly that like he is running an offense that the offensive coordinator is calling plays the way that he is because he's scared that his offensive line can't protect his quarterback. And so everything is quick game. Everything is RPOs. Everything is screen, because like the offensive line is terrible and the offensive coordinator knows it. So there are limited opportunities to see him really push the ball down the field. There are limited opportunities to really see him do much of anything as a down the field passer. Another area of improvement, I mean, not improvement, because I think he's pretty capped out here. He moves like a guy who's 6'5" and 230 pounds. He's not overly spry.
Yes.
But he is strong. He is very strong in terms of being able to withstand some contact in the pocket and even throw with guys draped around his hips. But the ball placement accuracy is good. The arm is obviously there. I think he can find shortcuts as well in terms of progressions and you know, some of those backside glances and attacking looks that he gets to do so, which is one of the things I loved about Mendoza, was that ability to like, oh, I think if I get a robber here, I'm attacking this backside glance. And he does. So like, there are some areas that I really love in that regard for Drake Lindsay. I do wonder again if he's a guy that we talk about in 2028 and maybe he's wearing a different helmet by then as well, just because like it's a barren wasteland outside of that left guard Greg Johnson. Like it's kind of a barren wasteland around him at Minnesota, and so it's really hard to scrape positive, like funnel through positive plays off of his tape. But the stuff that you do see, it's like, oh, hey, that's a big time arm. That's a big time throw. The anticipation is excellent when he's throwing these corner routes. The makings of a really good quarterback in an environment that I don't know if we will ever build a complete sandcastle without a wave crashing it down.
Well, that's the thing too, and because you mentioned his athleticism or kind of lack thereof, I guess, is that it's not the style that can really be super productive even with poor circumstances. You know, like a guy that's a freak athlete can still rush for 1,000 yards or rush for 800 yards because the O-line's letting them scramble and yada, yada. Yeah. Like he wants to win from the pocket, which is the good of him and kind of maybe the negative of him. Like I'm dead serious when I say this, that he reminds me a ton of Drew Bledsoe. Like size, throwing motion, arm strength, lack of athleticism, like all the, like that's how, I mean, to a T, every aspect of him. And even though he's big, a real legit, you know, prototype size, there's no fat to his footwork. His motion isn't elongated. Like even though he's got longer arms, he's not like a long motion. You even mentioned it, like that, how the ball kind of just pops out. It's a nice little quick motion. I love that. He has experience working under center, and you get to see him turn his back to the defense, run fake power stuff where he has to spin and fake and turn his back, and he gets his feet around and his eyes are up and he finds the throw. He can throw well on the move. It's just that he is not going to be a guy that can break contain and just run all over you or just run back and forth. He's just gonna be a specific type of player. But I agree, he might be a year away. I loved how you put it, that it might be a different helmet, even though PJ Fleck wants everybody to know that this is his guy. And he'll tell you, like, I've recruited him so hard. And this one, I was on the field when he was playing. We offered him that day and we called him every single day, which is great recruiting, but you never know. But he's got a lot of talent. I really enjoyed watching him. And some of his best tape was games they lost like 48-3 or whatever to like Oregon. And you still see 7-8 plays that I'm like, yeah, that's it's not just like, oh, that's cool trait tool stuff. It's like, no, it's a legit quarterback play. You know, throwing, like you mentioned, the seams over the middle and against cover two. And like, that's the stuff that translates. And it's the mindset stuff that translates. Like this guy gets how to play quarterback. But I agree with you. Maybe the circumstances don't allow for growth, even if, or it's just one that he's not blowing the water, you know, blowing the water out and everyone's just going nuts about him. But then you watch him on film in November and you're like, oh, wow, look how much he's getting so much better at this, and this, but might not have that stock swell until the end of the year. So, but he's a fun watch. I'm glad we've talked about him a bunch. I'm glad we're both kind of out on him. The Minnesota O-line is atrocious. Yeah. I mean, the two most pressure quarterbacks last year were Arch and Sellers, but I'm sure Lindsay wasn't far behind. Like, I didn't look recently, but I'm sure he's not far behind.
Every first and 10, it's like, here comes an RPO. Every first and 10, oh, here comes a screen. It's like, anytime that offense got into like and third and five
red zones
plus,
play
it's
action,
like, oh,
quick
God,
hitter.
Man. Yep. Yep.
Yeah. It's like,
yep. Every time. No facilities to get out of third and longs from that offense at all. It was brutal.
I take this sometimes as well. I tweeted a play about him before I wrote him up, and a coach from a different, I think Oregon, but a team that played him said like, yeah, this dude was like a warrior, and like he was just only thing that was making that offense go, because no one could block and the scheme was horrible. I was like, okay, you know, this is public, right? You know, that wasn't a private DM you just sent me. So you can look at the replies and see who it was. But I always just take that as kind of like, hey, you know, certain coaches said the same thing about Mendoza. They're like, that dude was a warrior and like so tough, like good shout out. We really loved watching him, like, or when we played against him, we respected him, yada, yada. So Lindsey's got that respect and excited to see how he progresses this year at Minnesota. I had some people even commit saying I had Minnesota bias. It's like, I went to Wisconsin. It should be the opposite. Fools. <Right. laughs> Come on now. It's the longest running rivalry. All right. We're going to take our first break. We'll come back with a few more 2027 QBs, some names returning to big schools, and some transfers that are of note that we want to talk about. But see you guys in a sec. All right, we are back. We're going to get to some names returning to big school. Some productive guys here, some national title contenders. I have to mention that. Some just blue blood programs here. And actually a name that I thought was going to declare, but he returned to school. But we'll start with usually when after I did the big board or anytime I've hinted 2027 quarterbacks, I always get kind of these first two guys, especially this guy. What do you think of Julian Sain? Where do you have Sain? You don't have Sain as a first rounder. You don't have Sain as a top 10 pick. You don't have Sain as a QB1. Man, you don't know quarterbacks. Man, have you watched any college football? But anyways, Julian Sain, quarterback Ohio State, extremely, extremely accurate, as everyone will tell you, because of his completion rate being like almost like 80%, it's like 77% or something. But at Ohio State, highly recruited guy, lacks ideal size. I'll just throw that out there right now. But I want to hear what you thought of Sain, Corey, and am I being a little harsh on him as kind of a, you know, not even really including him as even, I mean, I have a kind of a third round placeholder on him right now, but I'm curious what you think.
Yeah. So I got contracted to write a freelance article.
This is your neck of the woods too.
For an Ohio State site. Yeah, I live in Columbus. So I got freelance to write an article on him midseason of like, oh, we should be talking about Julian Sain. Can you watch his film? Can you break him down? Can you write him up for me? I was like, yeah. And then I wrote it and they're like, oh man, this isn't going to go well for our readers. But it was like in like October last year. And I was like, this guy's really good. Like he's operating a college offense. He does not have the requisite tools to be a first round NFL quarterback. Like Bryce Young is more athletic and has a bigger arm despite being smaller, like is more creative outside of structure, is more creative in structure. Like Julian Sain's listed at 6'1", 208. He's probably 6'2", 200 soaking wet. Like just look at how he fills out his pads. You can see the bottom of his breastplate, which is usually not a good sign for how well you fill out your pads. That bottom part of the breastplate. So like, and not only that, but like, then he doesn't have the tools to compensate. Like I think his tools are probably on par with Mac Jones, who went the first round 15th overall. Fine. But Mac Jones is also 6'3" and 220 pounds. Like he has a prototypical NFL quarterback body type to go along with that. So longevity issues, ability to withstand through contact, Ohio State's schedule as well. Like how many times was he off schedule? I can name three games. Washington, it wasn't overly dominant tape. Indiana, pretty poor tape. Mm-hmm. Miami. Pretty poor tape. Those are the only three times that he was really forced off schedule all season. Outside of that, Ohio State's boat racing everybody. He can, you know, get into first and 10 quick game stuff, third and manageables, like never really back against the sticks. He does have some nice anticipatory like seam ball throws over the middle. And I'll give him that. But like, even when you watch him throw those seam balls where he's got to put drive on it, he's torquing every ounce of energy he's got through his hips to drive those footballs. And so, like, could he be the most productive college quarterback in college football history? Yes, he could. Like that, I comped him to Aaron Murray when I wrote that article. I was like, Aaron Murray was like a two-time All SEC player, one of the most productive quarterbacks. Won a lot of games at Georgia. He could be Aaron Murray, and that's fine. I don't see the requisite tools to be somebody's franchise quarterback.
Yep. That's exactly how I see him. And it's just, whether it's fair or not, it's just not even where I'm squinting. I'm like, okay, he can make this work because of this, this, and that. Like maybe I could Ty Simpson again to someone that's recent, like where it's like, okay, he doesn't have the ideal tools, but his arm is good. He's aggressive. So he does this. Okay. I can see how this can work. When I watch Sain, I'm like, okay, this is Dylan Gabriel all over again, at least to me, where it's like, yeah, he's accurate and he does some nice things. You mentioned the seam balls. Yes. He'll push the ball once in a while. And it's nice. He'll throw some overs, but that stuff is usually wide open. or he's got perfect pocket. It's not when he's muddy, not when he has to, for a guy that's built like him, I expected a lot of creativity, and it's just kind of not like, he's just, that's not how he wins. All right. So if that's not how you win, then you have to be just an ace from the pocket. If you're not going to be a creative thrower, do all that. And he's just okay in that area. And that, and again, when you don't have the size and don't have that arm strength to push stuff, you become a very, the cap on your offense is low. Like, it's a low ceiling offense. And yeah, you might be able to function how the coach wants you to. And I'm sure some coaches will love that. But there's just a, yeah, lack of prerequisite tools, as you put it. And I agree with that. Like, not even just average. Like I'll just mention Dylan Gabriel, who went in the third, which I never agreed with. But that's who just reminds me of this as far as archetype, player profile, just so much. Gabriel was older. But I mean, just size and everything, even just the, how they want to win and what, like, the lack of ability to do so, I think, in the NFL, or at least projection. So yeah, we kind of see it. Like I said, this is usually how I have that third, fourth round placeholder. I only can get so high. I appreciate, you know, the accuracy and like how he does win, but it's just, you know, in the NFL, it's just a totally different beast. So we'll go into this next guy, CJ Carr from Notre Dame. So this is another guy that I'm actually curious. I don't want to get ahead of myself, because this is the guy I kind of go back and forth. I will say this, very, very aesthetically pleasing thrower. Throws a lot of nice tight spirals. The mechanics look really nice. So I think that's what gives him a lot of fans. I'm going to start with that. But he does do a lot of nice things. First year starter for Notre Dame. And then now coming in this year with a lot of hype, Notre Dame's got some talent as well. But what'd you think of Carr before I kind of tip my hand on him?
Yeah. The interception numbers don't really do justice to how sometimes reckless I think he was with the football in his hands. And I think a lot of it stems from, one, trying to do too much. So you'll see, I mean, it was like once every other game, he was forced out of structure, and instead of throwing the ball away, he'd pivot back the other way and then pivot back the other way and then try to launch something into cover. And it's like, throw the football away, man. Just please throw the football away. I watched the Pitt game, and he didn't see a nickel breaking off and threw a ball right into the teeth of the defense. So I do think there are some issues picking up sim pressures and rotations, similar to like early season or early career Sam Darnold. I also question how much CJ Carr was asked to do at Notre Dame outside of just like confirming post snap and throwing the football. Like, it's a lot of just like rhythm
fire.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Again, I think that the ball is beautiful. I do think he can pop the ball a little bit better than most guys in this class do out of his hand. So there is a lot of a good amount of drive on the football that he throws as well. I just think there's very little creativity, and it's rare that you see him showcase athleticism. So it's hard for me to say what kind of athlete he is as well, off the top of my head, because there's very rare instances where he is moving with the football. I think he's got to sharpen up a little bit more post snap, and maybe a little bit too quick to confirm post snap as well, from what he's seeing pre snap. I can see how you can get there. So again, this will be my like third round placeholder. A big jump could happen, and he definitely has the tools to be a first round quarterback. I just need to see more put on his plate. I've even talked to some people close to Notre Dame who say he's pretty hard on himself too. And that's a hard trait for a quarterback. Like, you got to be able to rinse and repeat and go back out there. So,
that was my issue.
So from a mentality standpoint, that's gotta be, the memory's got to shorten up a lot from him as well. Like, don't stack mistakes. Don't, you know, you got to rinse and repeat. So, that's kind of where I'm at with CJ Carr. Placeholder. I see the tools, the evident arm. I need to see a little bit more creativity and not just like systematic 1-2-3. This is, I'm playing quarterback, you know? So.
Yep. He would be my, God, well, him and probably this next guy. If we met my top five in some way, shape, or form are Manning, Moore, Sellers, Mestemaker, Lindsey in some way. Like, he would probably be the next one up for me, I would say. You kind of nailed it. Like, I think his size is fine. Like, I'm not going to use it as a big knock for him, but it's definitely not a plus. It's like, you can, how he plays too, you can get away with it. He's older than Sellers, even though he's a grade below Sellers, which I think is interesting. that's, I always want to keep an eye on that. He's also Lloyd Carr's grandson, which I learned a couple months ago. But anyways, with him, it's like, I like how you put it. I could see how you get there. again, he's very aesthetically pleasing to watch as far as how he throws. And it's like, yeah, this is how I would coach a guy. So his footwork and how the mechanics look. It's very Roger Clemens-ish. I even say Chris Leak, if you can even throw that out. Chris Leak just did that perfect spiral every single time. You know, he obviously didn't have a great NFL career. But Carr, I could see how you get there. And I agree that sometimes I thought some of the accuracy sprays were a little too much for you. And when he pushed the ball, the pick game you mentioned, a couple other games too, where I thought, didn't even come close to completing the throw, like real sprays, not like, okay, that just rose on him or something like that, which is, I don't know, for a guy that how I think he has to win, he can't do that. Also, like you say, being reckless with the turnaround stuff, right? I'm going to try and break contain here. I'm going to break contain here. That's not your game. You know, you're going to be a good thrower on the move, but maybe it's just not going to be that. I have him in this kind of third round grade. I have him above Sand easily, but I should say easily, but I do. But I do think there are some fun stuff to work with, but I do think he has more questions to answer than maybe even these other guys. I think that'll surprise some people, but I do, like, even compared to Lindsey, I can project Lindsey a little easier in some ways than I can with Carr, whether that's fair or not, but that's how I see it. So yeah, he just has to show me a little more, and he can, like, he could easily rise if all of a sudden he just hones in some stuff, because he does enough well. And on top of having enough, plenty of arm strength and plenty of kind of good throws, throwing somebody open. I just think he has to do it more consistently. But again, he's a redshirt sophomore. All right, let's get into the guy that personally I thought he should declare, because especially how this class ended up breaking. This is Trinidad Chambliss from Ole Miss, who will end up being a little older. He's a transfer from Ferris State. He stays at Ole Miss this year, does not follow his coach, Lane Kiffin. He was, and I'll just kind of get out in front of this, one of the more pleasantly surprising watches that I had. I think this Chambliss plays quarterback way better than you anticipate he would play. You think he'd be a runaround guy. He's undersized. He wants to win from the pocket, and he's got a good arm, I think. I think he can zip that ball in, and he understands timing. He understands some ball placement. And I was kind of hesitating, going like, well, you know, I'm trying to rank it outside of the kind of top five. Like, Chambliss, I have as up there with Carr. Like, I really dig Chambliss's game, but there's the red flags of the size, the age. I get all of that, but this guy kind of really understands how to play the position, which I think has surprised me. I thought that he worked from the pocket better than Dart at times in that same offense. And they kind of asked him to do a little bit more in that offense than they ever did with Dart, which I don't know. That was just kind of broke my brain a little bit. But I really like Trinidad Chambliss. I'm curious how you ended up on him, because he's a guy that usually doesn't fit the profile that I'd really dig, but I just think he really knows how to play QB.
Yeah, he's tough as nails too. He's a lot of fun. Yeah. Like, the moment he came in, I was like, oh my gosh, this guy, who is this guy? Because it felt like that Ole Miss offense just like sprung up from the ground. Like, it, like,
because the other guy, the Austin baseball Simmons. Player, the
yeah,
yes, who had some
he's
talent.
He's at Missouri now. Chambliss just, yeah. Phew.
Okay, he's at Mizzou. Okay.
He's the starting quarterback from Missouri. Now they already named him the starter. But yeah, Chambliss, man, I'm pretty bullish on him too, because he's a window attacker. Like, again, I am all about window attackers.
Yep.
One thing we talked about this, you comped him to Jeff Garcia, which I thought was really awesome back when we were talking about him in the winter. But I think he's way more capable of standing in and finding backside sits, backside digs than Jackson Dart was the previous year. Jackson Dart was something that was on their front side. It's like, okay, he's going to turn into a running back, and he's really good at that, and he's got really good vision. So like that's fine. That makes sense. Chambliss is going to stand in there. He's going to get his eyes backside. And you know where I talked about Mestemaker, his feet being a little choppy, a little bit messy when he was forced to move his eyes. I think there's a lot of calmness and a lot of stillness to Chambliss. I do think he is a little risky with the football, and I said earlier in the podcast that I appreciate that to a certain extent, so I can't be like overly harsh on that element of it, but especially in the Miami game, there were some throws that I thought like, oh boy, you're really testing some muddy waters here. Yes. Throwing into coverage.
Oh my god, but, yes.
So he got like, the green light that ones.
Game he was like, he's like, substitute teachers coaching my team, let's go, baby.
yeah but then he'd do that, he'd like, it was that drive he threw that beautiful corner out to Daquan Wright where he saw it pre-snap. He's like, I'm hitting this. Like, two plays before that, he almost threw a back-breaking pick six, and he just came right. So like, that's short, like the memory of a dog, memory. That's what you want from your quarterback. Move on to the next play. And then he does, and it doesn't impact his mentality at all. You can tell he's a very mentally tough quarterback. Yeah. Again, the athleticism to use his legs is obviously a plus to his game as well. Undersized, obviously at 6'1", 200 is what he's listed at as well. But Ole Miss is a team that doesn't really mess with their heights or try to like fool people. Like, oh no, he's actually like 6'3".
Yeah.
If you look at like combine measurements to what they were listed at on their school website, they're pretty close and accurate there. So you can trust that a little bit more.
Minnesota. Yeah, he's like PJ Flex, like a bad example of that. He had like Rashad Bateman, like 6'3", 208. And he was like 6'1", 190.
Yeah.
Like, even a ballpark.
I love it. There's a lot there to like with Chambliss. And I do think that he could be like a Jeff Garcia is a good one who like had his starting stint, but then was like, he journeymaned it. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick would be like another like career arc that would be spectacular for Chambliss. So it's like, yeah, you probably want this guy as your backup, but if you have to throw him out there, he's not only capable of, you know, there's so many offenses that are like, if we have to play a backup, let's just give him a game plan, keep him ahead of the sticks. I think Chambliss could come into that spot starting tier. It's like, if you have to play him, you can still get some creativity. And if you are backed up to third and longs, you have a quarterback who can still dig you out a little bit. So there's like backup plus to like spot starter upside with Chambliss, I think.
Yeah, Garcia comparison, it was just, I mean, they're the exact same size, I think. And just like where Garcia can move and create a little bit, but he was in a West Coast system being a West Coast quarterback, traditional, and did it well. And he was kind of fire and had more zip on the arm and it kind of just could access that arm a little bit better than you expect. I think it was just the dig routes. I feel like I'm so shocked when a shorter guy can fire in dig routes. Those are the hardest routes for them because it's just the angles of the throw and like just, and he has, there's no hesitancy when he does it. Like you mentioned, he throws into spots and it's just, he nails it every single time. But if Gardner Minshew can make a career like this, like Chambliss, like, I mean, that's kind of like, okay, if Garcia is the high end comparison, maybe Minshew is the mid tier comparison, I guess. Like it's just far as kind of size, archetype, what the career could be. Yeah, I think he's very real. He's more than just a fun college quarterback. Like there's real NFL stuff that translates with his game, and he's got an arm. Like his arm's good. It's not a popcorn arm. So yeah, he's a really fun player. I'm very excited to watch him this year, and I'm excited to see what kind of where his stock ends up. I kind of know where I think I will end up. I only can get so high, but yeah, on day two, man, I've seen a lot worse get drafted on day two than Trinidad Chambliss. All right, let's get to the last kind of these names returning to big schools. This is Jaden Maiava, former UNLV quarterback. I'm going to butcher that name for the rest of the year. Transfers to USC. He went to a high school literally right down the road from me here in Vegas. It's actually the same high school my wife went to her senior year. She went to high school with Stroud. She was older. Rancho Cucamonga, and then transferred here her senior year, but same high school there. But anyways, that's how I knew of him. Yeah, because I was like, this guy was starting as a freshman at UNLV, and he was like looking good. I was like, UNLV's got a quarterback with, and he goes to USC. And I'm like, oh, okay. I was like, all right, I'm not the only one seeing this right now. I'm curious what you think of him, because I don't think we've talked about him ever. So I think there's a lot of nice. He's got solid size. I think he's got his arms okay. Maybe can touch good, but it's more okay. I think accuracy, he does a lot well, but maybe nothing overwhelming. But what'd you think about Jaden?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like does things well, like to be a good college quarterback, but the arm, I put it, it looks like he's throwing a beach ball sometimes, how the ball like shot puts out of his hand a little bit more than like aesthetically comes out of his hand. And I think that shows up in the amount of like drive. Too. Yeah, the amount of drive you can put on the ball, I think, is pretty limited. But the amount of touch you can put on it, I think, is good. You see some of these Mekhi Lemon things where he's just like almost dangerously layering footballs between three defenders, and Mekhi Lemon's catching it. But a pretty dangerous decision maker at times in situations like that too. Good body type. Again, I think we're looking at an NFL backup here because I think the arm is limited. I think the mobility is pretty limited too. Yeah. Like he's a pretty squatty runner. Pretty squatty runner. Not overly mobile. But again, efficient. So this would be the kind of NFL backup then where I would say you bring him in and you say, I've got a cost control guy for 4 years. And if our starter goes down, I think this guy can keep us on schedule and ahead of the sticks. Sometimes, you know, at USC, if he's behind the sticks, it's like, all right, where's Mekhi and Jacoby at? And just like, oh, we could throw it up. I don't know if that would work at the NFL level too much comparatively to how it works in at USC. So I think he's kind of capped out in terms of like physical tools, in terms of what you can expect from him in that. But if the decision making improves, I think you could really argue that this is maybe the top of that backup tier kind of quarterback.
Yep. My kind of grading scale, this is like a round four guy all the way to me. Mm-hmm. Because it's just, there's a lot to like. There's nothing that I ever watch him, I'm like, why'd you do that? Or what are you thinking there? Like, you know, USC's offense can kind of be point and shoot. So, but yeah, he's just not very explosive. Like the arm's not explosive, and his athleticism is explosive. He's an oozer. That's a term my dad would use. He oozes, as opposed to just, there's not a lot of snappiness. Which I think is a tribute to some of what you're saying, how he throws the ball, because he throws with nice, like corner routes. He throws really nice outbreaker corner routes where he could throw some touch out there. But throwing a drive or a dig and driving on a bend seam bender, I'm trying to think. I don't think I saw him throw a seam bender. Maybe
that's where he gets dangerous in the hospital ball territory.
I'm trying to think. Like his arm compares to, and this may sound mean, like late career Matt Ryan, where it was just like, you know, like that's what it reminds me of. Like it kind of reminds me of him as a player profile as late career Matt Ryan, but that's not what I want to look at for a young guy. I want you to access a little bit more. So I think we kind of seem the same way, where it's like he does a lot well, but there's just nothing overwhelming or nothing maybe good or better. And that's what you're trying to find, especially on day one and day two, especially a quarterback. I'm going to list off a couple transfers. You know, we already had the Mestemaker going to Oklahoma State, but this is a group of transfers. Could go all over the place. This is kind of like a little grab bag of what you prefer. We got Darian Mensah, who now is at Miami via Duke and Tulane. We got Byron Brown, Auburn via USF, followed his coach there. We got Sam Levitt, LSU via Arizona State in a... left that in trail of fire. Yes, he left Arizona State. And then DJ Lagway, Baylor via Florida. I'll just put it this way, because otherwise we could spend another hour on just these four guys. How would you stack these four? And would you consider any of them day two guys at this point in time? I mean, a very loaded question, because these four, you go all over the place with these four. And I'm making you answer first.
Yeah. I mean, I would feel really bullish about DJ Lagway, even up there with like Drake Lindsay, CJ Carr, if I didn't think that he was made of glass. I think that's such a limiting factor when talking about him.
Yeah.
But like the decision making too, obviously, and people are like, how are you still talking about DJ Lagway? Like, watch the guy throw a football. Look at the body type. Like the dude's tools are off the charts. But yes. I can't trust that he's going to stay healthy for 10 games, let alone 16 to 18. Like I can't.
His elbow might snap off. Like this is the first quarterback I've ever watched. I'm like, this guy's going to get Tommy John. He's the first quarterback I've ever watched. I'm like, this guy's going to end up with Tommy John surgery at some point in his career. Because it's just how he contorts it.
Yes, I mean, I would have him up there, but I'll still put him above Sam Levitt, because Sam Levitt is like, he falls in the category of quarterbacks that I call fun dip snorters, who just like want to live on the edge of just want to live on the edge. And like,
I call him,
it's
Heinekes.
Like Auburn Bo Nix. Yeah, the Heinekes, like Auburn Bo Nix kind of stuff, where it's just like, I'm going to run around until somebody comes open. And it's like, again, I mentioned the Mestemaker, like first read's not there. And his feet get frantic. First read's not there for Sam Levitt, and he is just like,
oh my God,
a bat out of hell. Like he's everywhere. Even like if you go back to the playoff season with Arizona State, if his first read's not there, he is firing 100-mile-an-hour fastballs to his checkdown, just like immediately. Yep. There's no touch on the throws. He is just like, get it out. Or running around like crazy. I do think that a Lane Kiffin offense is probably the best system for him, because he can kind of do dartish kind of stuff.
He's like a Diet Coke dart.
Not there? Yeah, exactly. So I do think that's probably the best system for him. Obviously, his body didn't hold up. And again, could that be injury? Could some of that be part of his preserving himself for the portal? I don't know. And I'm not going to like drop that on anybody. But again, he's listed at 6'2", 205. He's probably 6'1", 190. He's not very big. So I think there are some longevity issues, especially the way that he plays the game, especially the way that he plays the position. He's going to take a lot of hits. He's not very safe with his body. He's too frenetic of a quarterback for my liking. It's part of the reason I was out of Cam Ward, and I think that Cam Ward, or lower on Cam Ward, and I think Cam Ward even dialed it back at Miami, but some of the same stuff with Cam Ward, where he's like, I'm going to run around until somebody comes open and I'm going to find a platform to fire this thing from. Except Cam Ward had the arm angles and like kind of the, at least, goal to do it.
30 pounds heavier.
Correct. 30 pounds heavier. I think Sam Levitt's running around back there, and I don't know if he has an end goal in mind. Kind of, again, early season Bo Nix is what, early career Bo Nix at Auburn is what he reminds me of over and over and over again. So I'm pretty out on Sam Levitt. Again, could take a massive leap in this Kiffin offense where he's going to, like, they can embrace some of that stuff. Darian Mensah, I think he's less accurate than people give him credit for. But ultimately, I think he's tough and he's a gamer. He's tough. So he'll, and I think the Miami offense is gonna do wonders for him. If you look at what Cam Ward and what Carson Beck's done in there, I don't think he has the arm talent's average. I think at most, like the drive power is not impressive. Him. Yeah, the deep balls die. Like they hit a wall and they fall. And so I'm pretty capped out on him in terms of the arm talent, a plus athlete, but not like an extraordinary athlete with the football in his hands. I don't think as well. I think he's more quick twitch than like dynamic. So he can find a little window and sneak himself in there. But for a player without the physical tools that I think he tends to get accredited to him, I think he needs to be tighter in the quick game. More on time in the quick game, and he needs to be way more accurate. And so that's kind of why I'm pretty lower on Mensah. Like I need things to tighten up. And you know, we're talking about a program that has produced back-to-back NFL top 65 picks somehow out of Miami. So I think there's an easy pathway for me to see that Darian Mensah could be a day two pick. But the accuracy profile and the tools profile both are not there for me.
I'm more bullish on him going to Miami than I was on Beck. Put it that way. Even if I agree with some of the limitations Mensah has, but I'll put it that way. Like him going day two wouldn't shock me. Beck still going round three. I'm like, okay.
The top of round three, like not even pick 100. We're talking like,
I know.
Geez.
I know. I'm still trying to grasp that one because it's just like, we know what he is. Kind of know he's starting a lot of games. What do you think you're going to tap into here? But anyway, I'll put it on Mensah. I agree with some of the, again, sometimes when a guy throws very aesthetically pleasing, they throw a lot of tight spirals, people think they're accurate. And it's just something that comes up in people's minds. And I think Mensah sometimes has that where everyone's like, well, yeah, look at him throw. He's got a great arm. And it's like, it's pretty good. It's not great. And then people are calling him like baby Jordan Love. I'm like, baby, yeah, literally baby, like not even Diet Coke, like Coke Zero. I like Mensah. I just don't love him because of some of the I mean you nailed it, some of the arm strength stuff. I think some of those deep balls dive on him. I think when he drives on it, they can kind of get a little bit more touchy than drivey. And I think that's somewhere it is, but I do think he has some nice accuracy. I do think he can move fairly well and he moves in the pocket well. So I like, again, I could see him as a day two guy. I have him above saying, and probably kind of tiered the same as Carr more or less, kind of like in that round three-ish grade. So I like Carr just a little bit more, but those two kind of have kind of similar kind of grading, I guess. But what about the last guy, Byron Brown? This is my baby. So this is why I want to make sure. And I know I'm alone on Byron Brown Island, but what do you think about him?
He is a funky throw over the football. He's got one of the more wild
aesthetically pleasing. He is not
see.
As a thrower,
but I mean, I would say the arm is plus, he's got a lot of the same play style as Cole Payton. I mean, obviously North Dakota State runs a lot of like QB power and gap power stuff with their quarterback. And that's not so much what Golish does now that at Auburn, it's more like spread you out to every blade of grass. But, the dude is a fullback playing quarterback. In terms of the accuracy profile, it's honestly not terrible. It's not as bad as you'd expect. Again, I think that the drive power is adequate. I need to get a full charting profile on him, but I freshened up a little bit for this podcast and watched a couple games. He's fun. Again, if Cole Payton could go fifth round, I think this guy could go in that like that fifth round range.
That's what
You know, there are some teams that are terrified of quarterback sneaking with their starting quarterback at the NFL level, or terrified of designed runs with their starting quarterback at the NFL level to the point where they're putting tight ends out there on quarterback sneaks and stuff like that. Like, I think you could carve out something here for Byron Brown. He is just he's one that's like
he's a
I
weird
don't
one.
Quite yet understand what I'm watching when I watch Byron Brown.
That's it. It's like, he's so weird to me and I'm interested and I kind of like it, but I'm also like, there's so much screaming. I hate the offense so much. Just, I hate it with all my heart, And I'm sorry. I know it could be productive. Maybe it's because I watched the 2024 version of South Florida's offense, because it's the Tennessee offense. So it's doing all that spread it out stuff, throwing smoke screens 40 yards. Like, it's just it. And I made the joke before, I think I tweeted this when I was said, watching Byron Brown in that in structure is like watching Wizard of Oz when it's black and white. And then when you see him out of structure, it's like when Wizard of Oz goes to color. And it's like, oh wow, look at him. Ruby red slippers. Look at that throw on the move. Like, oh my God. Like, it's like magical. And it's like, he's a guy, it's more, I would love to take a chance on him around four and just be like, get him away from that offense. Get him away from whatever private quarterback coach is teaching him that throw motion. That's just like, because he's overly coached in that way. And I think there's a quarterback in there. Like, he kind of has some innate feel for the position on top of the athleticism and everything that I'm just kind of willing to kind of like tap into. Like, he's my little baby of this draft class. I'll probably be way higher than anyone. I'm not saying round one. I'm not even saying round two, but we might get up to round three, even with that funky ass throwing motion that I get it. And I get people making fun of it, but the ball comes out on time and it doesn't get batted down. That's all that matters to me, is it comes out on time or early, or does it get batted down a lot? And it doesn't get batted down. So that's where I'm like, okay, what's the issue here? Again, that's different in college and the NFL. We'll see how it goes in the SEC. But great athlete, maybe more of a fun player. Maybe he just turns into a Joe Webb in the NFL, you know, backup, special teamer, QB sneak guy, whatever he is. But he's just a guy, I think he has a little bit more realness to him, but he's just been in circumstances. I get why he's loyal. Like, I love the loyalty he has, but it's one of these where it's like, man, I wish I could just see you in more of a real offense where you get to kind of maybe an Alabama's offense or something like that, where I get to see kind of some real stuff out of you. Cause I think there is more to him than that, but
yeah,
we'll see. Another one, I'll maybe reassess this in Halloween. And he's like, Auburn's 2-5 or something. And everyone's yelling at me about it. But all right, last guy before we get to the last break, cause we'll do some, I roped you into breakout watch cause I might as well tap into your brain. Let's get into Brandon Sorsby. Okay. West Cincinnati and another school before that, which is also relevant to the discussion in Indiana, transfers to Texas Tech. We'll do this in a kind of a two-part. First, what'd you think of him as if nothing had happened and he would be playing this year? And also, where would you take him if he does declare for the supplemental draft? Because if anyone doesn't know, Brandon Sorsby is under investigation right now for some gambling, which I will say again is kind of a stupidity test. Do not touch it, guys. Like, they don't mess around with that. And I don't get why no one, and I hate people that defend the players on this stuff. And when Jameson Williams got popped and other guys got popped, it's like they tell you this stuff 100 times to your face, like all this stuff. So it's really just like, why would you even put yourself in position? But anyways, he got caught and it looks like it's not going well. So we'll see what happens. And if he might declare in the supplemental draft, which we haven't had for a few years. So not going to lie, kind of giddy about that. But what do you think about Sorsby, his player profile, and then maybe we'll get to the supplemental draft conversation as well.
Yeah. I mean, if he would have come out this year, he would have had the most arm talent of any quarterback in the class. Like, the ball explodes out of his hand, and it is flexible, and he can throw from a variety of platforms, and he can do a lot of fun stuff with the football. He's another one of those quarterbacks that I also think there's more there than what was gotten out of him at the college level. Scott Satterfield is not one of those coaches that I trust to be a quarterback developer. Not that I would have thought that like that would have gotten out of him at Texas Tech either, but I think a lot of opportunities to actually push windows and throw the football down the field would have been there this year compared to last year. Obviously, you see a lot of the production comes when he's able to just hit the back foot and throw these RPO glances and throw these RPO seams. But the ball explodes out of his hand. I think he's got a really high-powered arm. And he's at 6'3", 230, I think is what he's listed at. He's a really good athlete. And not only that, a really fluid athlete. Like, he will stick a foot in the ground and make defenders miss in the open field and then finish falling forward at the end of all of his runs as well. So from a player perspective, I like him. Some of the decision-making is a little funky. But again, that offense, I just felt like there were limited answers to. As well, limited areas for him to go to the football. Like, there aren't even hot pots for him to find in that offense.
It felt like Mendoza at Cal's offense.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. No checkdowns, ball placement. RPOs to the outside. And if the RPO is covered, you're totally screwed and you have to eat it. Yeah, I could see that as well. But continue. Sorry.
Yeah, the ball placement needs to be better, obviously. Yes. Like, I think he tries to do too much sometimes and falls way out of his mechanics. There's like throwing off platform where you still feel comfortable being able to generate through your hips and torque through your hips and keep your front shoulder closed. I think his front shoulder flies open way too often, and that leads to him spraying the football over the place. So he is a spray thrower, but again, 6'3", 230, big arm. Good, like not even good athlete, like great athlete. I think he's probably Cade Klubnik ran a mid 4.5. I think he's probably a better athlete than Cade Klubnik with the football in his hands. So you could see how an NFL team would have fallen in love with him had he declared. I think that he probably would have been quarterback 3 drafted had he declared this year. And I think there's a chance that maybe Ty Simpson went 13, so I doubt that he would have been quarterback 2. I would have liked him more than Ty Simpson if he would have declared this year, even with the accuracy issues. There's a lot to work with and a lot to mold here from a body type perspective, from a tools perspective, from an athleticism perspective. I think there's a lot to work with Brennan Sorsby. If he were to declare for the supplemental draft, I don't know how any team could justify throwing a day 2 pick at a guy who just legitimately gambled on his future. Like that's a tough ask. Correct. Fourth round, you could get away with throwing away a day 3 pick. Yep. You could get away with tossing like Brennan Sorsby.
Yep. That's why someone asked me on Twitter and I said, yeah, round 4. I feel like that's a fine dart throw. Yeah, I feel like supplemental, there's no rules. I'm just kind of, this is how I would do it. No one asked me, but this is how I would do it. What do I have him graded as? Okay, now dock that one round. Okay, I feel like that's kind of feels safe. You know, like, okay, I view this guy. This is how I view Sorsby. He's kind of like a late round 2, round 3 guy. Okay, take him in the 4th. Mm-hmm. Like that's the bid I would give or whatever. I know it's not a bid, but yeah. but no, I'll start with my negative with him is that the outside accuracy was really kind of like, that's what hindered me from getting too high because I see the tools, great size, thickness and strength, I think. And you mentioned the athleticism. He's a legit runner. Like, he can run in the red zone. He can run between the tackles. He's got vision on top of some speed and size and strength and all that and contact balance. I just think that, you know, some of the accuracy stuff to the outside, it gets a little too cute. Like has kind of the newer throwing motion, as I like to put it, kind of the hip torque. And those guys, sometimes it looks just like a little bit not as fluid as I would like sometimes. And just kind of like that can lead some sprays. It's just more the step he takes. I feel like he's a short stepper, and that can lead to the rising shoulder and the lead to a spray ball up. I notice he sprays a lot, throws up. But having said all that, I see the appeal because he's got tools. And way more tools than a lot of guys, like you mentioned, especially in this year's draft class. The two guys I had, my day 2 guys were Simpson and Nussmeier. Those Sorsby's got way more tools than those guys, even if, you know, they had other attributes that were nice. But yeah, I kind of, as supplemental wise, I throw a 4th at. I see people saying, oh, this guy's going to go round 1, comparing him to Mahomes. I'm like, all right, chill the F out. Like, let's not do this because that's going to create a whole mess of people's expectations and everything. So I think there's a lot of appeal to him, but there's just a lot of, there's still polish needed, I think. And maybe that's just some of the offensive stuff, or got to get to more of the flow of a real play as opposed to RPO timing. Some guys can, have some kind of get off kilter when the timing kind of gets more real, if that makes sense. So he's just a guy, I think he'd be a fun project for somebody, I think, and somebody to take maybe a stab on.
I agree. Pretty limited options, though, if you look at that, the first tier, pretty limited options. You know, if we are talking supplemental draft, I think how it's divided is teams with 6 or less wins are to get that first, get the first, tier of bidding. And, the Raiders just drafted a guy. I mean, you're looking at probably what, the Browns who drafted Talon Green, or the Jets who drafted Cade Klubnik, or would they even do it? Would they see Klubnik as a similar guy? Or I think like Washington to back up Jaden Daniels might, like, that's probably one of the better, like, there aren't a lot of landing spots for him, even in the supplemental draft.
That's a great point. And a lot of those teams, like the Jets, is like, all right, well, no, we're waiting for next year. Like the Dolphins already signed Malik Willis. Like, you just look team after team. Like, Steelers maybe, but if they ever care about one day in the future as opposed to the present and what happened in Green Bay 10 years ago, you know, definitely not the Colts. We don't need to add more mess there. Hugo, you know, not Denver. No, I'm glad you brought that up because I'm even just rattling. Arizona seems like they're waiting for the class, the real class. And I don't know. I'm curious if Shanahan guys would like him. You know what I mean? Like they mm-hmm. like certain types, and I'm not sure how they would feel about him because he has some stuff that they do, like the Bucks. That'd be maybe an interesting, dart throw again. Falcons dart throw, but maybe they just want to take a deep breath, reset. Maybe they want to see Jack Strand from Minnesota Moorhead. Yeah, he signed as a UFA. I don't think the Vikings want to add to a mess. Yeah, no, it's interesting when you just even look at landing spots. So I think that's a great point to bring up. So that's why this sounds bad, but just from a football sicko point, I do kind of want to see a supplemental draft. Although I do hate that it's because of freaking gambling stuff, because I'm so disappointed that any player does it, because it's just like, just don't do that. It's like they're loosening a lot of rules for you guys. Just don't do that. Like, come on. Like, you got to have some, like, be able to contain yourself. Like, that's the one thing I just don't get. And why people I always just go on and bang on about this is because my whole life has been like this, because either via my dad or myself, we couldn't even go in sports books my whole life. And I was just fine. All right. That's the rule. I know how much it was beat over our heads. And then I think that's just what just makes me so frustrated with these guys that are just like, I won't get caught. And it's like in their name. But yeah, anyways, we're going to take our last break. We just spent an hour and a half on 2027 quarterbacks. So I hope you guys really enjoyed that. We were going to do maybe a player to watch, you know, other key players that we really like. Corey had Brock Riker, a center from Penn State. I thought that was a great shout. Transferred from Texas State, I believe. And I had Zach Lutmer, who's a DB from Iowa. He was 19 on my too early big board. He's kind of the next Cooper DeJean. Safety, some outside corner. I think he's going to be a dynamo in the slot. But we went real long, and I want to get to the NFL breakout player watch after the break. But I just want to give a little shout out there. So thank you, Corey, for bringing up that suggestion with Riker. But we're going to take this last break and come back with our breakout watch. See you guys in a second. All right, we are back, and now it's time for this week's breakout watch. So every week in the off season on these once a week shows, we're going to nominate a player from the off season that's going to be primed for a breakout in 2026 in the NFL, of course. So when Matt's on, Chuck's on, myself, we have these breakout players, but let's get the guests involved. Enough of this echo chamber of football 301. Let's get some fresh blood in here. So Corey, thank you so much for having the answer here, but who is your breakout player for 2026?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Chicago Bears wide receiver Luther Burden III. As a draft guy, I was really bullish on Luther. Yeah, I was really bullish on Luther Burden III, even as a prospect. I didn't get how we got to this point where it was like, this guy's no longer a first-round pick. This guy's a second round. This guy's not like hardly a top 40 pick. I think we pegged him as a slot only from his time at Missouri. And just going back to my scouting notes coming out, I thought he had the requisite play strength, the requisite like fluidity, quick twitch to run a full route tree and play outside the numbers. And we saw a little bit about that last year. I think he will play predominantly in the slot, but now that DJ Moore is in Buffalo, I think that Luther Burden is in for a big year. And I guess, you know, maybe not a breakout candidate when you go for almost 700 yards as a rookie, but I think we could be talking about a 1,000-yard season here from Luther Burden. I acknowledge that there are some rookie mistakes on his tape as well in terms of running the right route or in terms of bending the route as appropriate to the coverage that he's facing and seeing the coverage he's facing, things like that as well. Like I acknowledge those were some rookie mistakes on his tape, but a full off season in the program, coaching continuity, obviously in Chicago from year one to year two, same quarterback. There's no turnover from him from this year to next year either. Or from last year to this year. And so taking over that DJ Moore role in Chicago, I think we're going to see an uptick in targets. And I think we're going to see an uptick in production. So Luther Burden's going to be my shout here.
That's a great one. Yeah, there's a reason they were comfortable moving on from Moore, other than probably that him and Caleb Williams don't like each other. no information on that, just basing that purely off film. And I also just think that I thought it was very indicative or very telling, I should say, that even with those mistakes you mentioned, like maybe ad-libbing a route, maybe going rogue on a route, Ben Johnson was still trying to find ways to give him touches. So it wasn't the mistake. And it's like, okay, you're in the doghouse. I'll never see you again. Ben Johnson's like, well, he's come back in one series later and here's a screen. And here's like just plays for you. And also, I mean, his movement ability is and contact balance, I should say. Contact balance is exceptional.
Tremendous.
He's a guy that moves way less, like way, he looks lighter than when he actually was listed. You know, if Johnson likes big receivers, and he still is a big receiver, but he's dynamic. So I love this because I think absolutely that he's going to have a breakout year, even if he's not fully formed yet. Even if he does have some limitations and stuff, it's like he is just such a dynamic player with the ball in his hands. And also, something that he did show in college a little bit, but I think it was really cool in the NFL, is how good of a blocker he was. He was a, like, legit, like, scrapper on, like key blocks. Watch the Lions game at Detroit. They get blown out of the water in that game. But then the first half, in the first quarter, he has a key block on a third and fourth down. And it's, like, on a receiver run, and there he is leading, and it goes to, he sifts through traffic, goes to the right guy, and I'm like, Luther Burden? Like, that was like, it was like a really detailed, nuanced thing. And then he had the physicality. So on top of all the dynamic play you have, there's some kind of like cool detail moments with him. But yeah, that, I think this is a great nomination because he's a very fun player. I'll get to mine. Mine's Cedric Gray, linebacker from the Titans. Now, yeah, I know. So he, from North Carolina, he was a guy last year. He took some time to come along as an NFL player, I thought. And then last year, I was watching few games anyways, but I was watching him, and he was kind of like the only guy in the back seven that was kind of like, okay, you know, held up. I was like, all right, Cedric Gray, way to go. You know, I kind of thought of him as a good, better athlete than linebacker coming out of college, which makes sense from his background stuff. But last year though, kind of really came along and actually better against the run than I anticipated. I think some of his recognition against the pass is still a work in progress, but this is a team that now drafted Anthony Hill, who I think both of these, Anthony Hill is going to need a guy to kind of guide him along, but I think this defense is going to be really good for Gray. You know, the Sala, Bradley defense. Also, everyone that yelled at me that said, like, Roberts, you know, Gus Bradley's not calling plays, I'm very aware. We were just talking about lack of ideas, maybe, or lack of new ideas. Robert Sala's calling plays. But with Sala's defense and how big and beefy that defensive line is potentially going to be or going to be, like, I think that's going to really kind of keep him free. And so, yeah, I just want to kind of give Gray a shout out. I like him. I wouldn't say I love him. I'm not saying he's going to be a Pro Bowl or anything, but I think it's going to be more like, oh, this guy's a good starter when it's kind of the Titans maybe kind of pull off a game or two. So also stat wise, second in stop rate last year among all off ball linebackers, according to Next Gen Stats, only behind Jack Campbell from the Lions. Stop rate is, or a stop is a tackle that led to an unsuccessful play for the offense. And then he was fourth in stuff rate last year among all off-ball linebackers. And stuff rates are tackles for no gain or TFL. So statistically, he had some stuff. I still think some coverage stuff will have to get cleaned up, but I think this defense will help him, and this kind of more real coaches will really help him. So Cedric Gray, linebacker from the Titans. Do you have any thoughts on him? I know it's kind of a random one. I'm gonna throw out some skill guys soon. I did Jalen Redmond last week, and this week I almost went with an offensive lineman.
Love Jalen.
I'm hitting up the other guys. So any thoughts on Cedric Gray?
Yeah, I mean them not draft. I mean, people might think that Anthony Hill will be their Mike linebacker. I'm not quite as bullish on Hill as a player, so. And I think most of his best reps are when he's working downhill anyways, to like his body type and that screams like
this defense. He's not Warner.
Play Sam. Yeah, go bash somebody. I think you can cut corners sometimes, and I think Mike is, you know, I follow the Browns pretty closely as well, and cutting corners at Mike has been their way to go, and like Anthony Walker and BJ Goodson have had like 100 tackle seasons for the Browns because they're just chasing tackle linebackers. So I think you can get away with it sometimes there. And I think Cedric Gray is a great shout there.
Yeah, I don't know. He was one I just kind of kept in my back pocket. And I was like, I watched a little bit more this week. Now I'm not watching college guys. And I watched about two or three defensive games. I'm like, yeah, okay, I did like you, but there's some cool stuff going on. So I am projecting a little bit of coverage improvement, but I do think he can maybe end up being considered a good starter maybe universally after this year. But anyways, we're closing it out today. And again, we'll be back every Tuesday. We're doing once a week now. I'm trying to think of some special maybe stuff I can throw in there, maybe some interview series or whatever, but I don't think any of them are going to be as good as this interview. Corey, that was awesome. Thank you so much for joining me. Please tell everybody what you're working on right now. I know you're kind of doing some draft series about some of these quarterbacks that we just talked about, but anything else that you're working on Daft on Draft?
Yeah, so Daft on Draft is just all year draft content, start to finish. So there's the Daft on Draft podcast. We record 4 episodes a week. James Foster, No Flags Film on Twitter, is my co-host there. So me and James are recording
James
4 episodes
too.
A week. James is awesome. Yeah, very thorough with his work. It's incredible to watch his work. And then obviously just trying to create more content. I do one live charting a week where, you know, I go through my charting process with the quarterback and I do it on, like, I record on OBS and I break it all down for you play by play that way. I try to do one live scouting a week as well in video. And then I try to drop a couple scouting reports, positional rankings, stuff like that once my big board gets built up a little bit, but still in the early stages. So just trying to watch as many players as possible and build that up to create more content later throughout the summer as well. So that's kind of what I got going on over at Daft on Draft right now.
Yeah, please, everyone, check that out. It's great stuff. Also, check out Corey on Twitter at Fake Corey Kinnon as well. Got plenty of great stuff. You'll get some background information stuff. Corey, you do a phenomenal job. I'm so glad I'm finally going to have you on the show. Like, I think you do a great job. So, like, you really do. You've been one of my favorite follows because you also will be in the middle of November watching some tackle. And I'm just like, there you go, bud. This is great. Like, you know, as I'm trying to catch up on guys too. So please, everyone, check out Daft on Draft. There's so much great content there. Make sure to subscribe, all that stuff. Also follow Corey on Twitter as well and all the stuff that he pumps out there and some Cleveland takes. You know, you guys just, you know, the Guardians just traded for a catcher. I don't know if you have
they needed
thoughts
one.
On baseball.
So I do love some baseball. Yeah. No,
bad. I know you do. So yeah. Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
don't worry. My catcher for the Mariners went from big bat to no bat this year in a very short amount of time. So I might be there right there with you as well. But again,
well, the Cavs ended up 2-2 in the NBA playoffs. Too,
oh so, yeah, you know,
shout out the Cavs
and the Wolves are 2-2. Yeah, so here we go. Yeah, there we go. Yeah, Cavs go Wolves. Let's have some good ones there. I know that was a interesting game. Donovan Mitchell, that was quite the half from there. We'll check out KOC stuff if you want to deep dive into basketball stuff. Yeah, right now, right? Especially in the half. But anyway, subscribe to us here at Football 301. Follow us, rate us 5 stars wherever you get your podcast. Please leave replies, comments. Love checking that stuff out as well. Watch us on YouTube, on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Make sure to like and subscribe there. I mean, we had a bunch of good stuff. You can check out Football 301, but we got basketball stuff out there right now, baseball stuff. It's all great. But thank you to everyone behind the scenes. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next time.